Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yes, I was going to tell you in a sense that how did I reach India? How did I get on the road?
My name is Ira Gopal. I'm from Maharashtra. I'm studying in Symbiosis in Pune. And I'm interning at Audible Radio for a month.
Okay.
And I'm here with Patrick. Could you give me like a brief introduction, please?
Patrick, came to Auroville in 1973. After we spent with my wife a year in the ashram, we decided to, via some circumstances, which are always a little bit mysterious, to move to Auroville. So we moved to Auroville in 73. We had a few months of moving from place to place till we were given the responsibility of taking care of about 12 acres of land, which we started to develop in order to be able to live there. So we made a well, sort of not fence, but put some cactus around the boundaries. I mean, just slowly. It was not what you see today, barbed wire, and you know, it was a little bit more light in its protective form.
So
we planted the first thing was to plant a lot of trees, since they were cultivating land, which was barely used. The fact that it was far away from the village and not having water, so they used to do dry crops, so land was a bit poor and neglected. So we with my wife and a gardener started digging pits to put trees, so we ended up with something like 60 mangoes, couple of other fruit trees that we went and got from Mysore. In agricultural university, which was supposed to have some very nice tree that we bought over there and brought down here. As we had no really residing structure, we had some sort of bamboo hut, which was very basic at the beginning, and we upgraded to a better bamboo hut, which was a little bit better, then to another bamboo hut. And then
was a bit better than the previous one.
A bit better from the previous one. I think at that, in those days even electricity came, because our neighbor Orovillian had such a amount of land that it was worse for the Tamil Nadu Electricity Board to put a transformer. So because of him, we had the chance to have electricity. So we got electricity in Las Cabanas, and after the Las Cabanas, we decided with our neighbor, who had studied architecture and was very fond of building, we made a little harder structure, which was half kacha, half paka. It was quite cute, and we did it for we lived in there for at least 12 years, till reaching a stage. I have to say, like, where the money comes from for all this. The money came from the fruit of the work of my wife. She works for an airline company, which I send her a plane ticket every year for 6 months. So that was enough, because I mean, we had no inheritance, no personal money. So we had to find a way to develop and live. I mean, she used to go for 6 months, 5 months, and then when that, due to the early beginning of economical crisis, suddenly show sign of not going to exist anymore, then we decided to use the last opportunity to build a house. So we made a bigger house.
Right.
Was not done by an architect, which was not done by a designer, except done by a very friendly local guy whose forefathers were masons, so he knew all about construction. So we managed to do with him an old style of house,
okay,
which doesn't exist anymore, which nobody really favor in terms of construction. It's called a Madras roof. It's made of rafters, bricks, lime mortar, so on. It was very pleasant because we were such a good friend with the mason that we often we ate together. I remember he worked at night. So we ended up getting a very nice house that we slowly made a bit bigger. So it's like 40 years of work, 40 years of great pleasure. We have an excellent neighborhood. The people we live around, we can't call that a community. We're not a community. We are a group of close settlement with excellent relation. That was also a great help because whenever we needed something, an advice, or we could always go to the neighbor.
Right.
So it's still a bit that way today. Not exactly like that.
It's different today?
Today, I would say like the comfort within Auroville lifestyle is quite preponderant. It's more visible. It's more visible today that people are not really willing, except for a very tiny minority, to live in rustic accommodation. Okay. Also, since Auroville has been made with the idea of a city of 50,000 people, of course, it cannot be 50,000 cabana in the middle of nowhere.
That's
so
true.
It takes another aspect. It gave actually a lot of chance for young Indian architect girls mostly to have the chance to build.
That's true.
Where they couldn't do otherwise, they could have been some helper in some big cabinet, and here they could realize what they have as an idea.
Do you notice a lot of differences between Auroville, like right now, and Auroville back then?
Well, you'd be blind or slightly bewakuf not to see the difference. It's like it's so visible.
Okay.
But what I told you, it's visible, but in a way, it's unescapable. It has to be like this. It has to be different. And I think it's up to people who knew a certain type of Auroville to readapt to today's one. You know, it's a bit more complicated in terms of joining.
Okay.
Joining Auroville, it's not so easy, but I mean, for people who have the will to do it, it's feasible. It takes a little. For certain people, it's easy. For certain people, it's a bit more difficult. It just depends on your attitude, personality, means of living.
Okay.
But basically, everybody managed to get in.
Okay.
For some, it takes 6 months. For some, it takes 2 years. Sometimes it takes 3 years. But you know, if you are determined to be part of Auroville, that's in your panoramic karma. You know, it's like where it's going to happen. There is no way.
Okay.
I mean, nobody can say, "Oh, I've been chosen." No, it's some sort of an offering from the divine in the life of people to have a chance to take part in this big endeavor.
What was the process of joining when you joined?
Like? No, there was no process really.
All right.
There was no... we were lucky because according to my personality, which was very unstructured, asocial, not very intent in effort, I would have found it difficult to join as today.
Okay.
The demand much more sophisticated than it used to be. No, open, you went there, we had a little bit of money, and it was extremely easy. The bureaucracy was practically nil, except for the visa. But I mean, we got used to queue up at visa office in Pondy. So that's also something which sort of demarcates the situation of today's.
And what about the environment of Auroville, like the surroundings, the landscape? Could you?
We were actually, for us, we were part of it, since it was the work we had been given to do.
Okay.
I didn't say chosen. I'm not from a farmer background, not from a countryside background. So it was something like, wow, a new game in your life, plant trees and, you know, do some bending and, you know, all things which are completely new in our life. That was mostly the work that in the beginning Rovinian did.
Okay.
There was a little group which were the emergence of the urban class,
right,
in aspiration. I mean, Office of Architecture with, right, Roger Angers. I mean, but most of the people who live around in the outbound, they were all concerned with planting trees.
Okay, right, right.
Which was in a sense necessary.
Right.
No trees, no life.
That's true. That's
people
true.
Wouldn't push the door today if it was to live in a place without at all any beauty or any,
yeah,
aesthetic.
Yeah.
So now we have aesthetic has been still people going planting, but I mean majority of trees are now huge and big, as you can see.
Right.
And now the beauty is being added up by new type of decorative element,
right,
the building.
Right. That's true.
So on the building, it's quite amazing. Quite amazing what they are building now.
Hmm.
We would have never thought it would be possible 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you go around and see all this condominium, two, mm-hmm, three story, it's quite elegant. And,
it's
quite
really
nice. I mean, when you live, I guess, in a place like Pune or Bombay or Delhi, it's definitely an option, no? Instead of being gassed in Delhi and die on the spot, I mean, you could easily rush to help. And it's what happened. A lot of people, not joining Auroville, but settling around. Whether it's Westerner or Indian, people who don't wish to be part of Auroville, but who don't mind to be around Auroville,
right,
for certain reason, they make themselves a little nest, beauty and comfort,
I see,
which tend to merge into Auroville as well.
Because these people are basically
not Aurovillian, but they take part, you meet them,
hmm,
you have contact with them, so slowly, who knows, their children might become Aurovillian one day.
Hmm.
It's what you see today as example. It's not what you're going to see tomorrow. So, I mean, the guy who said, well, it's my house, or my this and my that, maybe his grandchildren will give it to Aurovillian. We don't know what it's going to be.
That's
according
true.
To Mother's dream, it's going to be a little bit more widespread than what it is at the moment.
Okay. And what projects have you been responsible for since you've come into Auroville?
Involved. I mean, I've been working in many different activities of Auroville. I would say the main was working at Batu Mandir.
Okay. Oh, okay. You worked on the
as a coolie.
Oh, okay.
Because it needed a lot of coolie at the beginning.
Right.
There was a head, there was a sub-head, there was people who could read plan, people who could give instructions, but they were needing also a lot of people with muscle and goodwill.
Muscle power,
so, right. I worked about 6-7 years, and mostly it was on the outer structure, putting on the scaffolding, doing some coolie work. In the meantime, I'd been working... Did I before, after, difficult with the years to,
right,
really give it some sort of connectivity. I work in Portus. Portus is the food distribution of Auroville.
Okay.
So at the very beginning, it was extremely prehistoric. we were offered a free basket of some kind of edibles. And since we had a place to develop these 12 acres, we got a little bullock cart built, mm-hmm, with a bullock. So apart from using it for agricultural and farming purpose, I also used it to carry the food from Portus to the neighborhood. So that lasted for a while. Then when came after this prehistoric Portus, which was basically people would just faint to see what was in the basket in those days, and a bowl of sandy jaggery. I mean, it was extremely basic. And later on, it turns into something a little bit more shop-like. So I work also in this shop-like thing for a few years, till they change from pencil and block note into a computer.
Okay.
So that was that time I left. I work also in school. I used to be the librarian.
Oh.
I used to be the plug hole.
Okay.
When a teacher went,
substitute.
Yeah.
Right.
For the great fan of the kids who didn't don't take me seriously, luckily. So I was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
And then I work in the other last school, yeah, in the aspiration. I was also video librarian. I mean, just occupation, just to not by thinking that it was forced upon me to show up that I have some activity. Not enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
All what I did was based on enjoyment.
Right.
Was nothing compulsory.
Right.
So that was also quite a pleasant time. That was a very pleasant time. Later on, I went into sport.
Which sport? Any sport in particular?
No, yes. The beginning was surfing. I am the iconic figure of surfing. I used to go a lot to the sea. I always liked the sea very much. But the sea is a bit boring, so, there's no rocks, nothing to jump off. So one day we met some people at their house and they had a surfboard. So I borrowed the surfboard. I had no idea how to go with it.
Okay.
So, but by sheer obstinacy, I managed to some primitive surfing. And it went on like a snowballing. People were curious. Some they tried, some they went on, until it became like, regular activity among kids. So it has turned out I started about 25 years.
Okay.
No, it fell into the end of a bunch of young kids that we groom into surfing years ago, and now they became the star of the Coromandel Coast. they have students coming from all over India, from all over the world. I mean, they really turned this wild activity into some institutional. So now we have a surfing institute, which for a while I made an effort to go because I was still friends with the kids, but with the time, I have the feeling that the link is like the butter on the sun. It's melting. It's melting, and also you cannot have had before and have today. You have to be reasonable.
Yeah.
I had my good share of good time. So the rest today, leave it to the oncoming generation.
Right.
Then after surfing, I went cycling. One day we went surfing in Kovalam in Kerala, which has a known good wave. So I went with a friend there, and then, the waves were good actually. We got some good rides. And then we went sitting on the beach with a bunch of Western kids, Americans, and we talked with them. And they told us that they were coming to India from Hawaii on the bicycle. They bought their bicycle because they wanted to discover India on bicycle, but they were afraid on the road.
Okay.
Imagine in the 80s.
Yeah.
So they would have died of fear now.
Yeah.
So I said, listen, if you don't want your bike, I think the best place, they were foreign good bike in those days, the best place would be Auroville. So they came to Auroville and they sold their three bikes. I bought one of them and then I started cycling, and then we met couple of cyclists coming from abroad, so the activity became a little bit more expanding. We used to go to different little hills around here. I mean, it turned out to be also institutionalized. And the institution today is named Oro Velo. It's directed by a young, very sincere, enterprising Orovillian who have developed it with an enormous amount of work and love for the bike, because, I mean, he couldn't have done it if he didn't like the bicycle. So he started even building bicycle.
Oh, okay.
That's so
really
you have to go to Rovelo. It's quite something. I mean, it's like entering a bike shop in Europe. So they take part in competition, they have rides at different time of the week. That also, with all the modesty, even so my wife says I'm not modest, but with all the modesty, I have to say I was at the origin of these two activities.
Yes, you were. I read that you were like a really great adventurer in your youth, like you and your friends.
Oh, yes, I was a great adventurer in a sense that how did I reach India? How did I get on the road? I would say once I was free from the authority of my father,
okay.
I had a chance to have a couple of friends in the most popular section of the place where I used to live. I wouldn't say hoodlums, I wouldn't say gang, but I mean group of, you know, we sit in the garden together, whistle at girls, you know, like these sort of things like that. So I got a very good friend among them, and we had the occasion to go to Scandinavia because he had met a Swedish girl who had a terrible idea to inviting him. So one late summer, since we were more or less unoccupied and just, you know, looking at day to day what to do, so oh, let's go to Sweden. So we went to Sweden with not a penny, and
really?
Then we reached our way all the way there. We met the girl. Father was not so happy. He gave us 100 kroner each to vacate the place. So we went on, it was good because, I mean, otherwise we'd have to get stuck up. And so we went on discovering the whole country. And for 2 years we roamed around Scandinavia. It was like really, really a great time. And people were extremely hospitable. So we got like really, without a single penny, we never got short of food or roof. So we always had really a nice impression of the country. And after that we came back to France, yeah, hitchhiking. We met some kids outside hitchhiking a town in France going back to Paris. And since we didn't get any ride, we spent the evening at their place. And they were a bit the pre-hippie, you know, it was the big generation.
Hmm.
They read poems of Allen Ginsberg.
Oh.
I mean, it was something suddenly from our amusing travel in Scandinavia, we sort of started to get into a different atmosphere. And maybe those guys, they must have mentioned India, because another good morning, we left again without money. We left. No, we had a bit of money. Not much. Because, we hiked all the way to Switzerland, Slovenia,
okay.
Yugoslavia, Montenegro. I mean, all these parts, it's very funny because all these parts where recently we heard of war, terror. We were just like kids in a courtyard and they're just like everybody friendly.
Hmm.
You could sleep outside, nobody would. Yeah. I mean, it was quite amazing. And Yugoslavia in those 60s was pretty primitive. Huh? It was pretty primitive to get a ride. We had a couple of little Fiat car, very few chance to get a ride. So we hop on the trucks and stuff like this. Then we got into Greece. And from Greece on, you know, it was like a place where you stay in the evening.
Yeah.
Sort of kind of youth hostel. And then you have people coming back from India, going back to India. So this interaction brings you on, India, why not? So we went to India, but on a very, very slow program, because we, as I said, we didn't have any money, so we sold. One way to make money was to sell blood.
Whoa, okay.
So you get $15 for this, $12 for that. So in different places you sell your blood and you have a little bit of money to keep going.
Yeah.
So we went to Istanbul, we stayed in Istanbul, then from Istanbul, instead of going straight to India, we went down to, again, where the war, where the war was with the ICS at the moment.
Okay.
In Syria.
Right.
It's funny because you say, well, but those names, I know those names. I remember we traveled in a truck loaded with goats, and now there are guns everywhere.
Whoa.
And, I mean, it is now a war zone. It used to be a complete calm and beautiful places. I mean, it's just amazing. So we went down all the way to Syria. Syria, we went to Iraq. Iraq, I remember we were hitchhiking in front of a military blocks. Soldier, they came out. They gave us some money. They stopped a truck. They put us on the truck to Baghdad. From Baghdad, we stayed a few days without money. It was funny because we used to board the bus without paying the ticket.
Uh-huh.
And when the guy would come, he said, oh, Mafi Flus. That's the only word we knew, Mafi. Mafi means no. Mafi, yeah. Flus. Flus is the money. So all the bus was laughing. I mean, you could see the atmosphere of those days was very much into lightness and uh-huh. not taking things seriously. So after a few 10 days in Baghdad, we went down to Basra, and from Basra we decided to go to Kuwait. Why to Kuwait? Because in Kuwait you can sell your blood for $28. So we managed to hitch a ride and went into Kuwait, and from Kuwait on we went to Lebanon. I don't know why Lebanon, actually. Why did we go to Lebanon? You know, we were free of our time. We had no imperative to go quickly to India. We
took your time.
Zigzag.
Yeah.
So from Lebanon, we went back into Syria. From Syria, we went back into Turkey. Turkey, we went across Kurdistan and crossed into Iran. In Iran, we crossed into Afghanistan. Afghanistan, we crossed into Pakistan. And Pakistan, we crossed into India. Well, that was no Air France in those days. No Air India, no Air France. There was just the pleasure of going slowly from place to place.
Uh-huh.
It was a bit like navigating your nose in the wind without really having any sense of direction.
Right.
But finally, direction came. Later on, direction was given. It's given not via any organized things, just the wind, the divine wind push you towards the place where you should be, I guess, no?
But isn't the lifestyle in Auroville really different from your previous adventurous lifestyle? So what made you give up your life of adventure and live in a completely different way in Auroville?
Because, you know, like... let's say the life of beatnik cannot last forever. If you go beyond a certain point, from beatnik, you become a bum.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some things that a young man can be excused. People might overlook what you are due to your young age. But if you do the same thing at 30, 35 or 40, then you fall into another category which is much less pleasant. So I guess it was lucky. It was lucky that slowly it brought me to the place where I was supposed to be.
Right.
After the enjoyment was over.
Right.
And I could roll my sleeve and start planting some trees.
Right. So for you, what does it mean to be an Aurovillian?
To participate in the plan, in the vision that the mother had for this Auroville.
Okay.
You have to get rid of your own egoistic feeling or your own view, which are totally distorted. But you have to remember to stick with mother's vision of Auroville. The rest doesn't count. You can say, oh, this is like this, or this is like that, or like this, or like that. That doesn't have any relevance. The relevance is you basically made a pledge. We didn't sign any paper, but I mean it was a pledge, it was a commitment. So just go all the way to your commitment with your up and down, with your liking and disliking. And the fact is you have to realize, I think, even those who may have something to say about today's Roville, they will, in their inner self, know that it's the only place, and it's really a place which is different from all other places in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that it's a great gift. It's a fantastic opportunity for you to make your life.
Right.
It's bringing so much possibilities, so much benefit. I don't think anybody would challenge that. I mean, challenging that would be like challenging the divine. I mean, who is going to challenge the divine? I mean, if the mother says so, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Could you tell me of any milestones that you think are really important to you in your entire journey since you came to Oroville?
Yeah, basically it was meeting my companion.
Right.
Because I guess without this person, I wouldn't have been able to make it here. I never had the feeling, because I stayed in India about 3-4 years.
Right.
Not full year, but three months there,
yeah.
Bit of Nepal, a bit of this, a bit of that. And never during this time, I really... I could have learned Sanskrit, I could have done yoga, I could have played sitar, I was in contact very closely because I was always on my own. So I was often offered hospitality, I had the fantastic opportunity to meet people. But yeah, as far as I remember, I said, Patrick, no, you should do that or you should do this. No, no, I just like, ooh. It was not always a happy journey, huh? Because when you move around and you don't have any money and you don't have any idea definite of what to do with your life, it can bring you sometimes a little bit of questioning. But luckily for me, the questioning was answered by meeting my companion. So I think it's important. It's important in Oroville to have a good companion and a good roof. Because if you don't have any... it's like a bird without branch. I mean, like the crows, if he has no branch, what he do? He keep flying. So luckily we found the branch. Orville was a divine branch.
Yeah.
A divine branch that we are grateful to the mother to have offered to us. Otherwise, knowing my capacity, I would be on the ground. Feeding the trees. Maybe not the Oroville trees, but all the trees. And you see it. Lot of young people, lot of people from outside, they keep coming. I mean, you wonder what they do. There must be some magnet for people to come, even for you. Why this internship in Oroville? Why not in Dehradun or in Calcutta, no?
Because it's so different from everything
else.
Yeah,
it's what I say. It's something which is offered to humanity as a whole.
Yeah.
So it's not only for Orovilian. And I think one thing you will notice always in Orovil, there is no Orovilian with the sense of pride or, you know, seeing the elected people. I mean, everybody remains extremely... aware that they had been given something.
Right.
They are not giving something, they have been given something, which is quite different.
All right. Is there any of the mother's teachings that are especially dear to you that resonate with you on a personal level?
I think I would say all mother teaching, because she was really able to use words which were able to reach everybody. So whatever she said, you couldn't say, oh, I don't understand, or off. It was all extremely explicit, extremely clear for everybody to really understand what she meant. All our words are important.
And that's it. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Thank you.